Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Hey, it's the Longest Stride podcast. Today, we have a guest that's been in the community for a while now. Obviously, he's a runner. We've done well to bring on a lot of runners. He's currently doing a few projects right now. And to introduce him properly would just like not give justice if it comes from me. What we'll do is just getting to know Bernard Aberquez. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, B. For a second, Andre, I thought we were starting a new podcast.
I know. I think part of it is like, we try to keep it interesting, right? So, you know, the food runners that happen, and we're trying to make sure that we're able to provide as much facets as possible. So the food runners was a different one. I hope people like that episode. And then stay was a little bit different. But so today we're talking to B. People know him as B.
People know him as B. Other people may know him as Bernard. Others may know him as, the man that's always running around Toronto doing crazy projects and amazing things. And I don't mean crazy. I mean, like, super inspiring.
In a good way.
In a very good way. And he's I think Bernard's a man of the people.
Ah, man, for sure.
He is. Yeah, I think he is.
Bernard, you guys are too kind.
Well, I mean, and you know what? We didn't take any notes this time. We're just going to shoot from the hip. So, I mean, everything we say is true. Not that things we say in the past isn't true, but it's all from the heartbeat.
It's not scripted.
So there's a lot we want to unpack here. So what I think we usually do is when we have our guests on is we try to learn a little bit about kind of their history and stuff like that. First of all, after you crushed your marathon like 8 weeks ago, that first one that kicked off your wild project, and I saw your time, I'm like, hold on, pause. This guy's a hardcore athlete. Like he's not slouching. So I think we really want to get an understanding of kind of your history and what kind of sports and running was like growing up, so we could paint the picture.
Sports wise, actually, my background is fine arts. So as a kid, I wasn't much of an athlete. I was drawing all the time, and then I went to an art school, and that which was my high school, and from there, like I got into breakdancing. Yes. And so I wasn't into like athletics, but I got into breakdancing. So maybe skip some classes and we'd be in the hallways breakdancing. And that was athletics for me. So I don't consider myself an athlete. I may be athletic. And then from there, I think I've been doing like Thai boxing, so Muay Thai, for 17 years, quite a long time. And it was in Thai boxing that we would do maybe like 3K runs. You'd get some runs in. And I did Thai boxing for a long time, but never competed because I'm not a competitor. Actually, I was scared to ever get in the ring. That's how it really went.
Really?
Yeah. And even when you look at my running career, I don't really like doing races either. So like I like running, but I'm not much for the competition of the running.
Just a quick question. Did you drag cardboard boxes around with you, broken down boxes to do breakdancing in the street?
Not in the street. You know what? We would do what we call concrete sessions. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I asked because in my hood in Brooklyn, everyone would walk around with boxes, broken down boxes, and they would just drop it down and you just breakdancing battles in the like on a sidewalk and
you just
brought me back really back when you mentioned that. But
we would have like big outdoor events where like they have the cardboard laid down and then the linoleum, and they do like outdoor battles downtown.
Amazing.
Yeah
it still amazes me you still could like put out a set. Like, you still get on your hands and get it done. And it just goes to show, as you said, you weren't athletic, but it still rang true today that you still had the knack for it, even if it was a different discipline. And in Muay Thai itself, you've probably changed body shape 7 times to even be in the different sports, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I was also like a gym rat. So right now I probably run around 147 pounds. The heaviest I've ever weighed was 185.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that?
I was probably 21, something like that, 22.
Was it just like a time in your life?
Well, when I first started getting into the gyms, it was all like just about weight training. And so I probably shot up 30 pounds in, I would say, 2-3 years.
Oh, that's mass from working out.
Yeah, yeah. Like no neck.
Oh, you know, my seriously?
My shoulders. Yeah, my shoulders would probably look like the size of my head.
Oh my
and
God.
And then right after that, I got into the Thai boxing and then I lost like weight in 3 months. I probably lost 25 pounds in 3 months.
Cardio bouncing around, just like kicking, move, high intensity stuff. Yeah. And wow. Oh my goodness. Wow, I didn't know that. Okay. You don't like racing, but you like running. So do you race at all?
So what happened was like, I became a run guide in a run crew, and when it came for like race time, because everyone's training for a race, I decided like, I don't want to run myself, but I will guide, I'll pace a first time runner, a first time like marathon, someone that's been training for their first marathon. I'm like, you know what? I've been here like the whole training season. If you feel like you want a pacer, I'll run with you. And so I would do the marathons like with a first time marathoner.
Okay, so what was your first time marathon? You'd have to have one if you're just pacing people casually.
Yeah, so my first marathon was, I did a 3:20 pace. That was probably back in like 2011. But it wasn't until 2015 or 2016 that I was running like downtown with running crews. Before that, I actually started with like the running room up in North York.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to place when... you did have a different sport. Snowboarding is one of your all-time faves. And you did have an incident, but trying to place that, was this...
That was 2015.
That's 2015. So it was a year before, and then you went through a full-blown recovery.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then even then, you still came back and still dropping numbers on the board.
Yeah, that's what happened. It was I got into my snowboarding accident. And before that, I was always chasing times, like... the BQ, like what's your BQ, you know, how you get here, how you get that. And when I got into my accident, and I've never like broken a bone before, so I've never really been injured. And my snowboarding accident, my knee, like I ruptured a whole bunch of stuff, ligaments around the knee. So I was on crutches for probably like a month or two. And then I was with a cane for another 3 months. Oh. And like I was out for 8 months. And at that point, you know, I was like, when I can walk, I'm going to be grateful to walk. And when I can jog, I'm going to jog. And when I can run, I'm going to run, but not be competitive and just be grateful that I can do it. And so that's when I started joining crews, and I decided to become a run guide. And same thing when I was doing the races, it was, I'm not racing for myself. I want to be there to support someone that's doing it that for their first time.
Wow. That's wild. And full recovery took a while, but full recovery, right? You don't have any like lingering issues.
I mean, it doesn't feel the same as it did before my injury, but I mean, my 100 miler came out afterwards. Like I've never done any of those, you know, any of those types of things before. So I can't say what a 100 miler felt like before my injury.
For
right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel good for anyone, let alone no.
The idea of what you've gone through with that recovery period is what stem just the way you look at running now. It's just appreciation and how you lend your ear to people that do run or starting up running in the community. So that's why I even brought up the incident, not to bring up bad stuff, but I think that's where you just kind of like something else is there and just being competitive.
Yeah, no, it was definitely like a change of mindset. You know, before, even though, like I said, I'm a competitive person to myself, but you know, I get like race jitters, I get anxiety. So I don't like to go in and with the high expectations for myself. but I enjoy inspiring others and telling people they can do it, you know.
You said a couple of things that I just keyed in on. So the first thing you said a few minutes ago, you talked about Boston. So I'm trying to understand, you're not, and I think I kind of understand because you just explained in a few sentences the kind of the race jitters. But was there a point where you were about racing and trying to, and you had big goals, and was Boston even one of those goals?
Yeah, definitely. So when I started, it was like 2010 or 2011 when I was running with the Running Room. And, you know, that's the conversation. You first start running with a group and the questions are, you know, what are you training for? You know, what are your pace? You slot yourself in like the pace groups within your community, right? And so when that becomes the topic of conversation, it's like if I'm talking to someone else that's chasing a BQ, I'm like, oh, what is that? And I'm training on par with them. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go for my BQ. And then, so it was all about, you know, times and goals. But at the same time, I wasn't running in, like, I didn't have proper training. So I was running three times a week, but my main focus was like still being in the gym or doing my Thai boxing. And actually that comes to it. It brings up a funny point that back in the Running Room, I was probably comparing myself to one of the fastest guys in the group, one of my friends, Jonas. And I was running three times a week. He was probably running five times a week. And there was one day I was like, you know, how do you get, you know, how are you getting those speeds? And he said to me, because like I said, I was in the gym five times a week. And he said, you know, Bernard, you asking me that is like me going to the gym once a month and asking, how do you get as muscular as you are? And I'm like, oh, it totally said it. It said it into perspective. I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing the work he's doing, right? So why would I expect to get his times? And so, yeah, I just, you know, I didn't like all that, the pressure you put on yourself, but I know what it feels like. So that's why after my incident, and I came back, rehabilitated myself, I was all about, you know, inspiring the beginners. And like, people are asking, you know, do you have any tips? I can blab on for hours about tips. So,
yeah. And you have always been a corner to my running and other people that have just direct conversations with you. But there is also the different approach that you take to training in general, just like you mentioned earlier, where you don't have a training thing that is on paper, let's say. But I think one of the things you mentioned to me is that in order to prepare for your 100 miler, you had to get your volume. So what you did then was pretty much go to every run crew every day, anywhere. So talk to us more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was already in a crew, but I needed to fill up the other spots. So any other day that I was, the free days I had off of from my run crew, I was going to go in and join another crew and train with them and see how they did similar training. So I had a track workout on Tuesday, but the other run crew had track workout on Wednesday. I did back-to-back track workouts. And then Thursday I would have tempo or interval. And then on Friday, another crew had their tempo. So I'd go and do that. And then Saturday was long run. And then I would go to another crew's long run. So I just filled up.
You know, some crews do rest like easy days, right? You could find a crew that could do like an easy day run.
Well, then I would find two crews that do easy days and just do no running.
It's still running.
Hey, I'll just take all the breaks. I'll fill up all the.
And I'm obviously kidding. I mean, there's so many different like formulas to this, and you could speak to five different coaches, and you'll get five different kind of approaches to running. So there's no right or wrong answer to anything, and that's not what this is about. But it's what it does is it gets you prepared for things that are out there and things that are coming. So, you know, and I do Tuesday and Thursday speed and long run Saturday. So it's all how you approach it. So that's good.
Yeah, and I think going back to even just that approach, it's, I guess it's unconventional, because everyone that might have had a goal, they think they need this great structural, like, I have to follow what my coach says. And nothing against any other methods or anything like that, but I just found it interesting where I wanted to be social, but you could, the beauty about the city, and Jonathan and I always talk about the city, is that you could find a crew for almost everything or every day of the week. And the fact that you've just leveraged the crews that already existed pre-pandemic to just go do the volume there. And, you know, the other caveat to this is, like, you did all that stuff without a watch. You just recently got a watch. So you just run to run. Yes, it was just like run to run.
Yeah, that was part of the whole competitiveness, is that if I didn't have a watch, I didn't know my times. So I wasn't about recording times. It's only, I mean, I got the watch from you, Dre. You gave it to me. It's a hand-me-down, so.
No, don't think of it that way. There's a lot of slow paces on that watch, right?
Oh, they're all gone now.
I know, it's all broken.
When I first got it and I started dropping in the info, it was giving a new record.
Don't play him like that, Bernard.
That's fine. And that's fine. You know what? I could explain that whole thing. But it's a new record. It's because he never had a watch. So he doesn't even know your prior record. But a real brief story about that. So I want to buy a Suunto watch because the battery life is longer for ultramarathon. So I was like, oh, cool. I have a Garmin B. Here's a Garmin. And you just didn't really want to use it. But at the end of the day, I was just like, it's up to you to decide what to do it. Jonathan, let me tell you. So this guy takes a watch. His runs were syncing on mine. So I was like, my new PB is what? Like, the info was syncing. It synced all his run on my thing. And it was just like hell. So the way I was able to delete his runs off my profile was, oh, I can't run like I was looking at the paces. But so, you know, luckily I name all my runs. So the runs that aren't named is more likely to be Bernard's. But yeah, that was like a weird, funny kind of thing where both of our runs mixed in together. But I know, I don't want to take someone's stat. I want my own stat, you know?
That's amazing. It actually, you know what? It speaks to your relationship with running, Bernard. Like, no watch, your approach to racing and kind of the called anxiety. It's a different relationship that I think some people have with running. Some people are, you know, and I was like this for a long time, and I don't know if I'm like this as much anymore, but everything was numbers. Everything was like, every run had to be better than the last run, and all my races had to be better than the last race. And if it wasn't, then what's wrong? And you can get into this spiral sometimes, and you approached it because you're proactive about not getting into that feeling and not feeling that way and having the anxiety of pushing yourself. And yes, you can always be competitive with yourself, but there's a limit to that sometimes, because you just, it's degrading and demoralizing to yourself, right? So was it always something you considered, like running? I know you're talking about Boston, but that approach, is it maybe something that came after the snowboarding, or where did that approach come from? Were you just going to do it for the love of it?
It came after that. That's exactly what the incident or the accident did for me. Totally changed my mindset. And I said, you know what? The fact that I can walk, I should be grateful enough I can do that. And so that's what I wanted. And yeah, I had decided to not have any of the race stats or comparing myself I go on Strava now because I have to, like, with virtual races, you have to have a profile and upload those numbers. And yeah, you can get, sucked into seeing, like, oh, who runs what, you know, and compare yourself. So.
Yeah, very much so. Because even with time and stuff, people would know your time and you don't even remember your own time. You know, they may not say it to you, but there are individuals that are mentioning in their description on their Strava, kind of making an excuse on why they didn't run fast today or anything of the sort. So that's its own space. But I've also seen yesterday where someone was like, yeah, I went with my watch, but I was just trying to just feel out how I feel on the trail. So there are people that are mindful of it, that it can lead you into a direction where you don't feel, so, you know, a day you blow up, you don't feel good. You're not going to pace you think you're supposed to. You start thinking of everything else. But some people gamify the number. I'm sure JG gamifies the number by using it like, okay, I'm following the training and stuff like that. So when you see progress, that's another, you know, check mark. So I think we all start off that way by seeing some type of measure. And over your measure is, you know, for some people that just start off today, I had a new staff at work and she's like, I just want to not make my lung burn me. So I, you know, give her that tip and then she'll get into another space and another space. But seeing the numbers is another way of motivating individuals. And I'm not saying anything new here. We all know this, but it's there's plus in both ends of it. One of the things that I do for my own numbers is every kilometer I run, I put a dollar in an account, and then that account is called my run fund. So if I'm paying for a race or anything like that, so the more, you know, kilometers I run, the more money that's in that account to pay for races. So that's a way I gamify it and not just see the stats.
That's cool. All right, let's switch it up a little bit. So let's move on to Everyday Fit Social Club. So I'm curious because I know you guys are friends. Is that where did you guys meet? Where did that connection happen?
Yeah, well, we started Everyday Fit. I mean, I guess Dre started Everyday Fit, and he just had a shirt, and I remember seeing that. We were actually in a crew together already, and I said I really like the name, and I'm not just about running. I have like my breakdancing. I had, you know, my Thai boxing and boxing. At the time I wasn't on social media. Well, I was on Facebook, but not Instagram. Okay. And I wanted to create an Instagram account. And so I was like, you know what? Everyday Fit, that sounds good. I like that. I don't need to create like, hey, how do I just jump on on your crew with that cool t-shirt? He's like, it's not a thing. Just we'll create a Instagram for you, Everyday Fit. And so we did that.
And then the crazy part of that story is that Everyday Fit wouldn't have existed without you, to be honest. I don't know if I ever opened up about that before, but in reality, we used to do trail run, a coworker of mine, Will, and he's like, yo, we should start something and start getting like more people come out. But it wasn't about a crew thing. It wasn't about like trying to get numbers. It was just us just saying, hey, we were being fit every day. And we started making shirts. We started making stickers, do all the good stuff. But it lost motivation. You know, Will moved on to another job. I started doing my own thing. And we just had some collateral. You know, when B would bug me every night when we finished running, it's like, yo, you should start something. I was like, all right, cool. It's not going to be another crew. So because that already exists, but also maintaining that, I can't just do something and not seeing it all the way through. So I was just like, why not? I just not do anything. But he put a spin on it saying, if you were Everyday Fit, I was Jonathan, Everyday Fit Jonathan, that's an alter ego that you could showcase yourself as an athlete without feeling that, no, you're using your family platform, Instagram, to then showcase that you're an athlete or keep yourself accountable. So the end result of that was anyone could be Everyday Fit anything. And when we dissected and like, you know, exploded the entirety of it, it opened it up for anyone to be part of that. It so happens that the seven guys that do it right now is that we're friends and we just do the things anyhow. So then it led to Saul, like, hey, let's just put a name for yourself. And then it's like, okay, we'll do it. So it didn't really became a thing you have to sign up as a membership or anything of the sort. But Bernard kind of plant that seed, like, hey, it could just be like dissected and not necessarily be a thing, but he wanted to post. And then here I could post this way and just, That was the crux of it. And then we started pitching to different sporting agencies, businesses that we'll do like a stunt, let's say an example, like an Arterix was a successful campaign. So that's all we do it. Because in reality, if you pitch to a business or just, you know, say you'd like some gear, who are you and why you want that? But if we come as a crew or as a name or something, you know, to embody, then we live by a certain ethos that may not be defined. it's easier to sell that, you know, because then we come and that's what it is. And then we start having interest from people that just want to join Everyday Fit. And I was just like, it's not really like that. So it's not an exclusive club or anything of a sort, but at any time we all could move on and you know, start different careers and do anything else. And it doesn't feel like you have to. So that's why I didn't want to be responsible for someone else's well-being. So for us, we're just friends, and then name comes after.
I love it so much. And anyone that kind of goes to the Everyday Fitness page or Instagram, it's such a diverse group of individuals that have all different backgrounds and experiences. And it's not just like, hey, we all run. There's all, it's just fitness in general, right? And the way you support each other and your physical, your mental kind of well-being and stuff like that, there's a vibe there that you don't get in like a run crew. This is beyond that. This is something completely different. And I love that. And now every, like, you're right, Bernard, every time I scroll through Instagram or something, I see like Everyday, you know, Fitness Bernard, something come up, or Saul or Mo or Trey, and it's like, or Will. It's like, you guys got this like great, great thing going on. So that's, I think I may have known you before that, but that's how I know you. And it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it's a cool thing. Every individual in the crew thinks it's a cool thing, and yeah, that's what keeps it going. To have Saul come up with a crazy idea, it's just like, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah.
You know, if Dre, same thing. Dre plans something. Hey,
let's go.
We're doing this. Okay, let's go. I love
it. Yeah, because we realize too, also, anyone that wants to do something like that, just do it. You know, you don't have to join someone else's thing, or you know, just make it your own. We had good resources in place to get it done, you know, from someone that could do a logo, from someone that could write well, someone that takes photos. So these things help, you know, but at the end of the day, they're Wolfpack now. I'm watching Wolfpack. Wolfpack guys are, you know, we can't compete with them, but Wolfpack, there's a crew there. And it's
John,
not that they're trying
those
to,
guys,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so guys. That would have been an example, but they still can't lift weights more than us, but you know, it is what it is. So we might do some friendly competition there. But again, we're here to talk about Bernard.
Yeah.
So in terms of Everyday Fit, so right now you live that ethos, and I think the next phase for you, you wanted to just do a project for yourself. And then JG will ask you all about that project.
Yeah, so we've been speaking to a number of individuals on this podcast that come up with these really inspiring projects that push themselves. And we kind of made fun of Connor in the last, and don't worry, we won't make fun of you. We won't call you a project manager, but we called Connor the project manager when we spoke to him because of some of the things he was working on, Project 24, 48, and stuff he's doing in the mountains in BC. For different reasons, people are coming up with these really, really great ideas. The one you came up with is something I've never heard of before. It's really different. And maybe you can kind of walk us through, because I don't want to say what it is. I want to hear it from you, Bernard. What was the genesis of this Project 42?
The genesis of it was, you know, when I had turned 40, I know that birthday mileage was a thing. And like, I hit 40, I'm like, holy cow, like, now I'm 40 years old. You know, I'm entering into a new decade. Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know what? I got to do some, you know, it's supposed to be like a landmark, like every 10 years when, you know, it's a special number. So I said, okay, 40, I guess I should go and do, you know, my birthday mileage, go run 40K on my birthday. So I did that. And then same thing the year later, 41, I'm like, okay, I'll do the same thing. And what I do on my birthday is I run a geo map of 1979, which is the year I was born. So the first one was 1979 and it was 40 kilometers. Then I just add a kilometer every year. And when I had finished the 41, I thought about, oh, next year will be 42. And that's actually the marathon distance, you know, so that's like your champagne birthday mileage idea, right? Like I'm turning 42 and I have to do 42K. So what should I do for that? And the plan was to do my first sub-3 marathon. I'm like, you know what? let's take that time to really train. If I have to ask, you know, for real coaching and a full plan to get that to, you know, solidify an actual sub three, then I'll do that. And, but then the pandemic happened. And when the pandemic happened and there was no races, you know, I was like, okay, I could still do a sub three on my own. But you know, what would it be for? Like, I would have preferred to do it in a race, you know, make it something special. And so when there were no races, I said, okay, I'm still going to run my 42, but who knows how long this pandemic is going to be, when races will come back online. So how can I just like extend this calendar, this running calendar? And so that's when I came up with the Project 42, which is, you know, I'm going to run 42K for 42 weeks, right? On my, starting on my 42nd birthday.
That escalated. So that was
42, 42, 42.
And this time of recording, you're on your 8th marathon, going on 9th, right? Correct?
Yeah.
You did that's 8 correct. Yesterday.
Yeah. And still going strong.
Yep. It's I'm getting stronger from the runs. I know, Jonathan, you saw my first one. The first one, yeah, it was exciting, and I wasn't tired from any previous runs. So yeah, I probably did around a three hour, 10 minute. There was some, I could see some blips in the, with the Garmin where, so I calculated, it said I did a 308, but I'm pretty sure like there's 2 minutes I should add in there. And, but from there I've been keeping it close to 3:30s. So.
Yeah. And then, between marathons is the missing part that we don't know about. What do you do between marathons?
For the first three, I wasn't doing anything. I would do a marathon and then just, you know, relax and then do another marathon a week later. I started feeling stronger, and so I've started to add runs in between, like if do a shakeout. But there's also been other incentives, like there was the Chinatown Runners.
Yep.
So I also didn't want to let my marathons get in the way of doing other incentives. So if I have, like, I don't have a goal time that I need to keep. So if I have to do a 4-hour marathon, I'll do a 4-hour marathon. So I don't burn myself out if I'm going to do another, like if I'm going to run 20K the day before. I don't want it to stop from my other run initiatives. So,
okay, lots of questions. So I think the first one is, what was the approach going into this? Was it, okay, we know what the goal is, 42 marathons, 42 weeks for your 42nd year, I guess your 42nd trip around the sun. Was the timing, doesn't seem like it was part of the equation, but did you consult with anyone to say, if I run too hard, I won't be recovered fast enough for the next race? Or did any of that come into play here? Or did you just approach it like, I'm going to run at like 80% effort? I know I can do weight, go way faster, but I need to conserve and not do anything, you know, foolish so that I'm ready to go the next week.
It's always been feel. I mean, and that's coming off of like the injury back in 2015. I've always gone on feel. So I based it on that. And the ultra, the 100 miler, like after you do 100 miles, you have a pretty good gauge of what your capabilities are. Like I can't even imagine, I can't even think back to the 7 day a week running I was doing that we were speaking about before, where I was just filling up the whole calendar. Like really 42K a week isn't a big deal. If you look at, I mean, if you spread it out, that's
okay. That was going to be the other question. Yes. If you spread it out in a week, 42K, I mean, for some people it might be a lot, but 42K is, you know, probably half of what a lot of people do when they're training. So the idea of running 42 in one day, right? I mean, your body, everything starts to kind of break down a bit, and then, you know, you have time to recover, but you're also not running for 6 days and then you kind of run on the seventh day. That's what kind of you're doing at first. Was that doing anything to you mentally? Were you thinking about it? Did you feel like you had to get out for a run, maybe to just loosen up?
Yeah, maybe like a Wednesday would come around. I'm like, you know, I should probably do like 3K just to see how, you know, my joints are feeling. But yeah, now I'm not worried about running, just going out and running at all. So like, I'm actually doing stride work. Recently, I've been doing stride work on the Saturday evening, the right before the marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe there are different elements that are part of the entire formula. So an example would have been when you were planning it, you didn't know that you had to work with different brands in order to make it possible, because there are different elements or symbols that were necessary to keep you. It's almost like you're a NASCAR. You needed pieces. So who helped you with that in terms of brand wise? Who were those people that came on board?
I would say my main brand was Andre. Andre helped me with it.
That was even where I was.
He has a brand.
I was just trying to get the pieces keep you going. No, it wasn't for me at all.
No, that's for me to say. Like, this project, it was an idea for me, but really it came together. I told Andre about it and he's like, yeah, we can do this. Like right off the bat, he said, we. I'm like, I was just coming up with an idea for myself. And when he says we, it becomes a thing. And then he's like, okay, what do we need to do? You know, it's a team effort, you know?
Absolutely.
My biggest support is like, Andre was biggest support in the project itself. Saul has been coming through with the bike support, like during the actual runs.
Everyday team.
Mo has come out, you know, so, but originally, yeah, Andre said, hey, you know, what do you need? And brand wise, I'm like, oh, well, I know in order to do a marathon, I need shoes. So, hey, let's reach out. You know, what you're doing is an incredible thing, right? I would not say that for myself. It takes a, you know, a third party. It takes someone else outside saying, I couldn't do what you're doing, right? And so it's like, you know, people will connect to this and people will be inspired. So like, for you to reach out to a brand, I'm sure they'll come out, they'll support you. So that's what we started doing. We started pitching. And so my gear and my shoes are Reebok. Socks was Undefined. For fuel, it was Endurance Tap. Hydration is Noon. And I got some Rally beers for, you know, to celebrate. So
yeah, and you can't understate the importance of like brands and stuff like that, because, you know, a lot of times people think, well, yeah, you know, brands, they have ambassadors and they do stuff like that, and, you know, for the most part it's true, but a lot of brands like to get behind stories like this and initiatives like this, because they're bold, or they're inspiring, and they're something that people aren't really thinking about. That people are thinking about it. I don't want to say that the wrong way. People are thinking about this. There are a lot of people coming up with these really, I'm not trying to say the word crazy, even though I just said it, but coming up with these ideas. And I think with the lack of races and things like that, brands are looking for these individuals or these moments that they can get behind. And oh my goodness, I'm going to say it, rally behind. But sorry.
Yeah, but, always good.
Right. But I think that's what we need. And I don't think it's just the brands, but I think we as individuals and athletes and all that need that as well. We need these kind of stories, or we need people like you, Bernard, to take on these bold initiatives, because there's not a lot that's happening right now that's giving us a lot of inspiration. So.
Yeah. And then to divvy off what Jonathan just mentioned about brands wanting to do things, you know, all these brands are here within Canada, you know, so that's the beauty about it. And, you know, thanks to Rally, you know, thanks to Tap, you know, these are brands that are, if you present yourself well to them, they would be genuine with you as well. So a lot of the misconception is that, okay, your brand's just here to make money, and if I'm not buying something from them, then they're not going to want to deal with me. I think there's a different conversation when you try to be genuine and even show that you're genuine as well. And it could be such a space where you don't remember that the person on the other end of a brand, they may work for the brand just as a person himself and not just like their Reebok as a whole. They're just another person that you have to just be human first with them, because the misconception is like, well, you know, they're Reebok, so I deserve things from them, or the vice versa, where I'm not supposed to even speak to these people. They want to do things, and especially right now when Canada just needs to get on the map, where we're doing a lot more grassroots events and things like that nature. So, and when I asked Bernard about who helped him, it was not about me. It was more about showing that there's all these Canadian brands that who had the things to help. Endurance Tap is from here, you know. We mentioned Rally, and then Undefined X provide socks. So all the components that he needed to take on a marathon, you could get locally, you know.
You even have a race photographer.
Exactly. There's a local race photographer, Dre.Run, believe that. Yeah, so that's why I even brought that up. So we talked about the brand, but the other part that was cool was when you came to me with the calculation of how many shoes it'll take because of how much kilometer you're going to run. You've had that all calculated out. So no one knows about that. So you might know the numbers off the top of your head. How many tubes of the noon will it take to actually finish the entire thing?
Jeez, I don't even remember.
I think it came down to like 8 tubes, but yeah, how much was it?
There's 9 tubes. Yeah. The main number that crunching that we were doing was the endurance tap for sure, because I was doing like 4 endurance tap per marathon, and endurance tap is what, like $4 a tap.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
they hooked us up.
It calculated to like over the 10 months. Over the whole project, it was going to be over like $600 worth of tap.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wait. Yeah. I guess I should ask.
And that's what it is too. So we think about it like, hey, we're just going to do it like regularly. But no, you've increased doing a marathon a week. It's not like you wait for that one big race, right? Mm-hmm. So the expenditure will add up, you know, even tap itself would have added up as well too. So the calculations that you did, because you knew what it took to do them. But what was throwing me off was when the amount of kilometers that we were going to do in per shoes.
Yeah.
So you needed 6 pairs, I believe. Something like that. But just going through shoes like this, it was like something crazy. Because part of it is like, I'm sure new runners are maybe privy of this, but some shoes are somewhat rated. It's such a loose term on how much kilometers. It all depends on who you ask. But the more you wear shoes, the more your bad kind of form and stuff starts showing in the soles. So in order to not have any kind of injury, is to change them out real quick. And that's an example of why B. And then which Reebok did you choose again? I don't remember exactly.
The Float Ride. I was already running in Float Ride 2s.
Day 1s.
And then they gave us Float Ride 3, which is awesome. They gave me the new version. Amazing. Which I really enjoy them. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know what you the tools you use, you know, and that's another thing I want to share there too. It's not like race day, you're like, let me try everything new. You're like, I will stick to this, because there has been other brands that we could have approached that may or may not be genuine to you as a character or from day one. Literally, because you have the multi-sport, you like Reebok because when you did Muay Thai or still do Muay Thai, Reebok's there. When you do boxing, Reebok's there. So the different sports itself, Reebok was that encompassing brand that covers everything. So that's why one of the reasons why you stick with it.
Yeah, it's actually really important. That's another aspect that I guess I didn't think about is, you know, you're not just, hey, I'm running 42 kilometers. There's, 42 kilometers 42 times. There's a lot of elements to this. There's the hydration, there's fueling, there's all that stuff. There's a gel. It's like, it adds up. It definitely adds up. There's the kilometers on your feet and your shoes and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're not considering that stuff, this project could not happen. Like, you can have an issue in the second race, the third race. You can have an issue in the 41st race. So why give yourself an opportunity to have those kind of miscalculations or issues work. So then you do reach out and say, okay, I'm going to plan this. So I'm glad to hear that there's some planning that actually does have to happen here. And you don't just say, I'm just going to go out for a run every Sunday and run 42 kilometers. So.
Yeah. Nick was keen to pull that out, right?
Well, and I had learned that from the ultra marathon, you know, training for the 160K, there, like, you have to plan that all out. So that's where it all came from. And honestly, when you run a 100-miler race, you think you can do anything.
it's like the Superman level. I haven't hit 100 yet. JG, we're almost. When we like chill out off everything else, right? yeah, that's going to take us a couple of days. But there's this other bit of it too that I was impressed by was when you mentioned endurance, fuel, recovery, and hydration. And we've narrowed down all those components. But then you drew symbols that represent each of them because there's a website and stuff like that. But speak to us about it because JG may not know that.
Are you talking about the elements?
Yeah, like it's like fifth element in the movie, you know? But the fact that you hand draw that, yep.
Yeah, I mean, we came up with the elements of, I mean, really it came up with all of our planning for pitching. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. I mean,
the components.
I mean, Dre, you approached me and said, "Hey, what do you like?" You like I said, you came up and said, "What do you need? What do you need?" Like,
yeah,
I had an idea. Yeah, mm-hmm. And we had to sit down and table it out. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you need your gear, you need your fuel. Like these are the elements. You know, performance. Recovery.
Yeah, you know, recovery was a big one.
Think about everything that you need, mm-hmm. and then we can put something together to, you know, and it solidified the project itself. You know, like I said, or like you said, Jonathan, I didn't just jump out and run 42K. There was planning beforehand, and I mean, it's a 10-month calendar that we had to plan out for. So. I mean, we had like, you know, pen to paper and figure it out.
Yeah. And one of the missing component, I believe still, and we'll see if we even get into it. So we talk about recovery, but there's no physio, there's no RMT or anything of that sort. So like, what's that element we need to be able to add that to it? But so far you've mentioned that you don't have any issues in any way, but also the other discipline that you take on. So I know you do stretch, you're able to meditate and do yoga and stuff like that. So if you could speak to some of that in between stuff that we don't know.
Yeah. So a lot of times when we're talking about the recovery, or if you're talking about physio, that's like after you're injured, but yeah, I do enough things for preventative measures. So I make sure to work on my form, because it's a repetitive movement. So strengthen your glute medius. Like people will talk about having IT band problems. Well, if you strengthen your glute medius and have everything go to your muscles, then it'll avoid going to your joints, right? A lot of times you'll hear people talk about like knee pain. Well, your knee is just a joint. So what is it that, where's the problem really stemming from that the force is going into your knee, right? Your muscles are there for propulsion and for absorption. So figure out that first. And so I'm doing a lot of like preventative work.
You're bringing, when you talked about the symbols, I was just thinking about kind of when you talk about like your creativity side and kind of arts and like where you're pulling that from. And I just kind of like how you're, this is almost like an art project in itself. This is not just like I'm running 42 kilometers. There's a project behind it. You're also pulling in elements from, I believe it's a Japanese writer. So there's quotes on your website as well that you reference quite a few pages. So what's that about?
Well, I mean, I read the book and it really spoke to me, you know, what you think about when you're running. And
Haruki. Oh, yeah.
And so while I was reading it, it was like, I borrowed the book from the library, but if I had a highlighter, I would go through that whole book. There's just so many gems in there. And so I would take my phone out. Every time I was reading, I would take a picture with my phone, and then I would type it out. I typed out all the quotes. That way I actually had to go like reread it and type it out, and it was sticking in my mind. So it would stay in my mind, and it's like just something to think about, you know, while you're running. I've never listened to music while running.
Really?
That had originally started from the injury, right? When I was getting back from rehabilitation, and like I had to internally listen to my body, because like the first time you're always going to have like pain, right? And you have to decide, okay, is that an injury? Is that like, am I injuring myself, or is that, you know, a pain that will fix itself because, you know, the more you do it, you'll get stronger. And so I've just always listened to my body internally. So I've always avoided music, and, you know, you can get lost in thought, or you can actually have, you know, put mantras in your head. I mean, I've always had a mantra that I would say to myself, you know, feels good is good. So while I'm running, if it doesn't feel good, then, you know, either stop or dial it back. And, you know, that would always keep me going and keep me at a pace that I'm like comfortable at, and that I could endure. Yeah. So the quotes from Murakami, I can't think of them off the top of my head right now, but
they're lengthy. They're pretty lengthy, but I've read the book too as well. And everyone that took a gem from that book, if they've read it, right? And I think ultimately it's almost like, for lack of a better term, it's like a Bible. So the meditative lines from it, the quotes from it and stuff like that, people could relate to different parts of it. If you've run and feel running, not like a new runner that assumes that they know it already. I think part of it is that you relate when you read the lines. It's its own art form.
But let's talk about your routes now, because 42 kilometers every week, you run the same route, it's going to get kind of boring. But I bumped into you a couple of weeks ago on the MGT by Coronation Park over there, and we got into a really quick chat. Sorry, I hope I didn't take up too much of your time to run that day. Throw off your timing, but that was the day before. That was the day before.
Yeah, it was Saturday.
Yeah, you wouldn't have stopped. At all.
But we spoke about it, and it sounds like you kind of mix it up each week, or you try not to kind of run the same route. Is that intentional? Do you map out a different route each week, or is this something like meditative about going through that process?
So how I was actually training for this was I was doing back-to-back half marathons. I do a half marathon on a Saturday and then do another half marathon on the Sunday. And so I've had half marathon routes mapped out from my start location, from where I live. So now I've just been kind of changing the direction and just merging them together. And, you know, you can only go three different ways. You can go north, you can go east and west. But then, you know, you can add little, I'm starting to look at the city map and say, oh, you know what, I can deviate from my route, but go into, you know, Mount Pleasant Cemetery, or, you know, discover little areas, which changes it enough, really. But, you know, if things open up with this pandemic, for sure. I want to do some destination stuff, you know, go out, you know, outside of, you know, maybe go to Prince Edward County, or, you know, and go to places like, you know, where we can have support. Cause I mean, right now it's from my doorstep, you know, out and back, cause I just want to get home. But yeah, if we can get out and do some other locations, that'd be great.
Yeah. And I think with what you've been doing too, is not just the bike support, because at any time, even the bike support alone won't be able to get you out of a bad situation. It's almost just, you know, keeping you propelled, because this past one was like, it was raining.
Yeah.
It was raining. Yeah. As we were talking about that earlier. So you could prepare as much as you want, but it may change on you out there. But again, people are impressed every so often. People ask how you're doing kind of stuff. You did mention about doing destination and, you know, different events. One of the main reasons you wanted to make a thing out of this, because you could have just ran a marathon and call it a day, was the charity component. So speak to us about what, because there's multiple charities, what the main one means to you and then the other ones that you want to mix in with the events.
Yeah, so part of, you know, the idea of 42, I was thinking, wow, I'm actually, I don't want to say old, but I feel...
I'm older than you.
That's why I was trying to be careful there, but I don't know what distances you have to run for your birthday mileage. I know you did an ultra. Well, you did a 50, but you're not 50.
No, 2 years younger than that.
Okay,
sure you are.
So, anyways, yeah. So the idea, I'm thinking like, wow, we're aging, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And you can't fight time.
Can't reverse it.
So it got me to thinking about, you know, if there was a charitable component, what would I go to? And so I picked hospice because, you know, not to be morbid or anything, but you do have to think this is not infinite what we're doing. So I thought hospice would be a great thing. And I do know that Coach Ng, I know Chucky had talked about, like, that was actually the name that I was going to say at the end of my,
Coach
at
Ng,
the end of this
really?
Podcast. Yeah, I was just like, because she was the first person that I knew about ultras. Like, she works in hospice and she's like the happiest person. Like, she always has a smile on her face. And I thought, wow, I don't know what kind of perspective she has, but it's her smile, like, just... It's infectious. Like she's inspiring. So I thought hospice is something I wanted to donate to.
That's great.
And,
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing more to say. Right?
Yeah, no, but that's one of the many components because you did mention doing a destination run in Ajax, and that's for another charity.
Yeah. So sorry that not necessarily destination run, dedication runs.
Dedication.
So because there's going to be so many. Like I have 42 marathons and a lot of people are saying about the route or, you know, is it going to get boring? And I thought, you know what, I want to do dedication runs. And I do have a cousin who had celebrated 10 years of cancer free earlier this year. So I thought, you know what, I want to do one for the charity that she had was FU Cancer. So I'm like, you know what, I want to do something for that. So I'm still working on logistics for that. But yeah, I mean, this thing is evolving on its own, right? And if people hear this and people want to reach out and say, hey, would you dedicate a run to this? You know, that's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm just hoping for, to inspire people and it will in return inspire me, right?
I just thought of another, first of all, I think that's remarkable. I love the idea. And there's no bad idea for a charity. Every charity is a worthy cause, but the one you picked is really, really special. Kudos. I just thought of something as you were kind of mentioning this. There should be like a sponsor, like Bernard run. Like you should like, how can you sponsor a marathon? And maybe someone can like donate some product or something like that to sponsor you for one of your runs. It's a way of giving back to you for inspiring other people. So something to think about. Not saying
you
need to put that button on the website, but I mean it's not a bad thing, right?
There's a donate button there, so
use it. So that's what it should be. Like maybe we get the word out, something like that. So let me ask you, Bernard, because just listening to you speak and just your approach to this and kind of your background and how you're connecting the dots and even just approaching this, I think there's certain people that can take this on. Without the fear of, and there's always going to be fear of failure, fear of could you do it? Am I good enough? But a lot of people can't push past that. It's a non-starter because it's just, you're just afraid to fail. There's probably people out there right now that are thinking similar things. I want to do something bold. I want to do something big and scary. Like, and then they're going to listen to this and think, my goodness, like he's doing something extraordinary. What advice would you give to anyone that is in a situation where they want to take on a project, but they're just not sure if they can do it?
Well, I mean, right now I'm only 8 marathons in.
Still 8 marathons.
Yeah. But the idea is 42. I can't, like, I won't know that I've done 42 until I've done it. Right. And it's the same with the whole competition factor. So I'm a process person. So I'm just enjoying the process. And like, I can't, who said I may get injured and I might not be able to I might not hit that 42 number, but don't let it stop, you know, the idea to do it. You'll get there when you get there. And so it's one marathon at a time. I'm at 8, you know, next, the one coming up, 9. Like you put out 42 and you set your goals, but you take it like, you know, one stride at a time.
Literally longest stride. So JG, that was a great question, because in reality, you're right about someone not even wanting to put something out there because in fear of some kind of lashback, and not really lashback, but just any kind of naysayer, it could just turn you off. Because, you know, Bernard has had this too. It's like, yeah, that's not possible. Or why would you do that? But it's easy to get discouraged because you have to put it out to the public, but you may not have to. What he did, and he wasn't even telling us, was when he was doing a half marathon every weekend, and we just thought he was just running to run. But in reality, that was his way of, yeah, even feeling it out. If you're scared of like a time trial that's coming up or have a jitters, go run the exact same route slower and just feel it out. It gets it out for me. And also, you've just mentioned about just the process itself and not think about the end goal. You know, that could be also a process too, where the fact that you've been, or not just you, but anyone that's been running and run with a crew for, you know, every Saturday, let's say, and going out, that's a accomplishment. It's just that you didn't put a name or do a thing behind it. You know, it's like you want to run, you know, I was inspired by Phil. Phil run every day for like over a year. It's like every single day. Yeah, I was like, it's like how, you know, like we run, but not like that. That's a whole different thing. So make your own little thing, make your own little goal. And I think Bernard's right about just the process, because you've been doing it. You might not, maybe if you did set a goal like, oh, I run once a week, and that's a thing. It's just that it's consecutive because it's once a week every week. It may not sound like a marathon every week, but we know that there are a few ultra marathoners now that are running and doing way more crazy stuff, but this is our local kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
There are people that are more capable, but this is our thing, you know, so make it your own.
So you can't mention coaching because someone already did, but who's someone that maybe is inspiring you throughout this process, or, you know, someone that is maybe doing something out there that you're inspired by and you think maybe we should speak to them?
You know, I was thinking about just the running community, and, you know, I started with the Running Room, and I know at every, you know, Scotiabank, John Stanton would be there. And I'm from day one, I'm curious to know, you know, because I remember listening to Ray John's podcast, and he was saying like what the history of running in Toronto was like. And I'd love to hear that story. So
that's a good
I would
one.
Say, yeah, I would say, John, do I have to give more?
No. That's a good one. Okay. So I really want to thank you and just from, you know, Dre and I know, you know, Dre, and I know you through Dre and just some of the events, you know, things we're doing, get this, you know, we did the Scotia Marathon relay, Dre, right? With our Saucony fam. And you, Bernard, you were helping. I think Mo was trying to do something that day. He was doing some kind of big run. He was trying to work on. And I love what you guys have here. And I'm going to thank you, Bernard, but I also want to thank Everyday Fit, because you guys have created this thing that is so unbelievable, and you're a cog in that wheel. You're a piece of that puzzle, Bernard, and what you bring to the running community and the things that you're doing. And a lot of times it's like low key, it's kind of like flying under the radar, but you're doing these exceptional, extraordinary things. And it's been a treat to watch that stuff happen and just kind of seeing the things you do each week. And now you've got this Project 42, which thankfully you're not that much younger than me. So, I mean, it's but it's a real treat listening to you kind of walk us through the process and connecting the dots for us. And just whether it be the quotes or just your artistic background or how you did the symbols and all that, it's really great listening to all this. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you, man. And with that being said, this is the Longest Stride Podcast. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.